Good evening, this is Gary Kavanagh here on the right side. I'm here today with my friend and colleague, Michael Dwyer. If you can hear the thumping sound of European disco, it's because Michael is currently in a hostel in Belfast.
I'm not a happy bunny, Gary, not a happy bunny. See that bass? It's not the noise, it's the bass that keeps you awake. Anyway, sorry, go on.
So yesterday was Budget Day. And you've probably been hearing loads of stuff flying around about it, stats, figures. Most of them, you might struggle to figure out if they're going to impact on you at all. So we're going to focus on one particular section of the budget that we know impacts on a significant amount of people in Ireland. And so I suppose this podcast, what we're really asking is, if you are a smoker, do you know that you could be saving somewhere in the region of €3,000 a year through some very simple steps? Now, we're going to put a link in the description where you can go to what those steps are. I'll spoil this and say they require foreign travel, but they are very simple, very cheap, and if you're a smoker, well, I don't see why you wouldn't. Why pay $5,000 to the government when you can pay $1,600 and get the same result? People don't smoke in Ireland, but I really want to talk about it. And the figures are actually pretty crazy. I don't know if you smoke, actually, Michael, but if you do, you'll know that the price of cigarettes for a packet of 20 is going up to €13.50.
Gary, I would love to smoke. I smoked for many years. I smoked well. I smoked stylishly. I was very good at smoking, and I enjoyed it tremendously. A lot of people will tell you that when they look back over their lives smoking, that they think that actually 90% of the cigarettes they didn't enjoy. There may be truth to that, but God, those cigarettes after dinner with a cup of coffee and maybe a small something in a glass. However, no, I don't smoke anymore. Being a short, very fat man and with no money, smoking would be a really bad lifestyle choice for me. But I'm always interested in what's happening out there in the smoking world.
So yeah, I mean, it would be a terrible choice, particularly if you don't have money. So I ran the figures, and it turns out, according to the HSE, the average smoker smokes about 20 cigarettes a day, a packet.
Yeah.
If you do that every day of the year, 365 days. So I assume there are certain days you don't smoke. I assume there are certain days you smoke more, and it kind of cancels itself out. You will spend, at the new price that this budget has brought in, €4,927.50 a year on cigarettes.
That's a lot. That is a serious lot of money.
Well, I mean, the average industrial wage is 38,000. And that's before tax is taken off?
Yeah.
So $5,000 out of that, like, that is a significant portion.
At that point, and in fact at points similar for the last few years, people who have been giving up, it hasn't been just the usual thing about, oh, well, I don't want to die of emphysema and I don't want to get lung cancer, but also simply, my God, this is costing me. Because you're saying the 20 pack a day guy, most of the people I know would be, say, a pack and a half. So you can throw another half onto that. And other people will be opening 3 packs a day. So you're talking very, very serious money. And
I mean, if you're on 3 packs a day, you are spending 14,000 a year on cigarettes.
I mean, at that point, you genuinely are approaching the point where people are going to start breaking into cars to smoke to support their habit.
That's like second mortgage.
No. And there is, in a sense, the point that I wanted to make. Now, I don't know this. And I don't know if you heard anything about this, but I would be very curious to know if the minister or if the department had a very hard look at the effect that this is going to have on people who smoke. Now, what I mean by that is not the effect that on their lifestyle or their health, but rather on their behaviour. As you know, we've discussed this before in the context of other government taxes, and particularly sin taxes. There is very often in the models that people produce, there is the assumption that the consumer is a completely passive creature. The consumer will just, as it were, just lie there and take it. Where the reality is we know that the consumer isn't. I mean, for example, one of the things that consumers will do if they start to feel really impacted by the price of, say, the cigarettes that they're smoking, but they're not willing to actually stop smoking, is they may reduce their quantity. But one of the things they classically do is they'll move brands, and they'll move to a cheaper brand, and or they'll move to a brand that them more value. So, for example, anecdotally, it seems to be in the last number of years when I see particularly women smoking, more of them are smoking extra long or cigarettes of a certain kind. They're smoking brands that they wouldn't have smoked once upon a time. However, when you get to a certain point where the price really is starting to kick in, and I think this is a point that we reached already, maybe a couple of years ago, where we saw the people kick in, not to giving up cigarettes, but rather to biting the bullet and going to buy their cigarettes on the black market. Historically, back at least, I would say in the 80s and 90s, outside of the border towns and certain places like that, you didn't have a whole heap of a black market in cigarettes, maybe in tobacco a little bit, but not so much in cigarettes. Now, I've seen reports saying that like 29 to 30% of our market in tobacco products in Ireland is the black market because of the price. Now, that has a number of consequences. The quality control of the nature of the tobacco and the additives to the tobacco, we don't know about. Secondly, obviously, it's a loss of revenue on tobacco. Thirdly, people are now going back to a price level like maybe half or less of what they were, and are actually smoking more. We saw for the first time in years an uptick in alcohol in tobacco consumption, and I think that's as a direct consequence of people being driven into the black market. And the last point I want to make is a social point. The more people operate in the black market, that is, the more ordinary people there are who end up buying their fags in the black market, the more that will create more ordinary people. Because one of the things is, it becomes a normalized practice. It's not just, you know, bad people and scangers who buy their fags from these places, but if I know of a friend or a friend of a friend who gets, and they say, well, could you get me some? And eventually you become used to it, you become habituated, and you become part of this process. So if the minister was, and there was a report on the radio this morning suggesting that he was looking at this as a sin tax, but also as a potential a raiser of revenue, I'll be interested to see whether it actually does indeed raise revenue, or whether it just continues to drive more people out of the white and into the black market.
Yeah, I mean, this is something I've been hearing for years from kind of people in the tobacco industry, but also certain health professionals and economists, and I've never really looked into it. But I decided I would look into it after the latest increase in the budget. And what I found is actually quite dramatic. So if you are looking at we said the yearly cost would be about 5,000 if you're in Ireland. So what I did was I looked at Northern Ireland, Bulgaria, and Austria.
Right.
To see how expensive it would be to smoke the same amount in those countries. But I also looked at how many cigarettes you can bring back from those countries and the costs of flights to those countries, and therefore how many times you would have to go to those countries a year to perfectly legally get the same amount of cigarettes in Ireland. And you would think it worked out that was 10 trips.
Okay.
I mean, you can do it. It's just over 9, actually, but maybe you'll go the last time, pick up a small amount of cigarettes and have a bit of a holiday. But here's what I worked out. You could go to Bulgaria. Now, let's start with Northern Ireland, because okay, the price is the closest and you don't need to take flights. You can just drive.
And you only have to go there once as well, because there are no checks.
Yeah, you could go once, because no one is going to check. You could go up to Northern Ireland and you could get the same amount of cigarettes that would cost €5,000 in Ireland for €4,400 in Northern Ireland. That's at the current exchange rate. If Brexit goes badly and the pound drops, you could see that slip into, you know, high threes, maybe even lower. Right. So you're already looking at a €600 saving for just going to Northern Ireland. But let's say you wanted to go to mainland Europe.
Right.
And you were willing to fly out 10 times a year because you wanted to save money. If you flew to Austria, mm-hmm, which is right beside Germany, is not one of the former Eastern European countries, is not a poor country, is in fact an incredibly prosperous country.
Lovely, lovely country.
The cost of flying there 10 times to Vienna, buying the maximum amount of cigarettes every time, which is 800.
Okay.
It would cost you €2,500. You would save nearly €2,500, and you'd get 10 trips to Vienna.
No, sorry, could I rewind there just one moment, please? Are you saying that I could fly to Vienna 10 times and buy my fags, and that would only cost me 2,500?
Yeah.
Really?
It's the joy of low-cost airfare.
Who am I flying with?
I just put this into Skyscanner and took an average of the prices. It's only about €40 or €50 to get to Vienna and back. Now, I just took that today of the cheapest flights in the coming week, so that's going to fluctuate over the period.
Yeah.
But there are probably going to be times when that's even cheaper. Ryanair might have a flight and it might cost you a tenner to get there.
Yeah.
So you could go to an absolute one of the richest countries in the world.
And Vienna's
say 10 times a year.
Beautiful city to visit.
And you know what you could do, Michael?
Yeah.
You could save 2.5 grand, which you could use to, instead of just going to Vienna and coming back, you could stay a couple of nights.
Stay in the Sacra.
Have a bit of a holiday. You've got 2.5 grand.
Jeepers.
You're going to be there 10 times. Or if you don't want to go to Vienna and you just want to get it as cheaply as you can within the EU.
Okay.
Because remember, if you buy it in the EU, you don't have to pay excise duty if it's for personal use.
Yes.
You could go to Bulgaria. Fly to Bulgaria 10 times a year. And pick up the same amount of cigarettes, which is actually, I think, yearly it's something like 7,200 cigarettes. It would cost you €1,614, which is to say you would save €3,250 by flying to Bulgaria 10 times a year.
And flying into Sofia, which I'm told is a very pretty city.
I'm told Bulgaria is absolutely beautiful, so if you're a heavy smoker, or actually if you're just a moderate smoker, and you ever want to see Bulgaria, well, here's a system that'll get you there once every 5 weeks, and you'll save €3,000.
Do you know, at this stage, you might, you know, there are a lot of people in the boom who bought property that out there. Like, you know, there might be a cheap little flat you can get.
That is, the fact that you can go in the EU, never leave the EU, and save €3,000 by taking 10 flights. Or, do you know what you could do? You could give someone £200 to take the flight for you, and you'd still save money.
I've always been a little bit confused about this notion that you're only allowed to bring 800 cigarettes back. My understanding of the law after Mario Monti, etc., was very clear that if you bought something in one country in Europe and paid the tax on it in that country, it was the same as buying it in your own country. And that you could
immediately seem to be contrary to European values of the free movement of goods. I think what they do is they say if you're bringing more than 800, then it could be for resale, and in that case, we will charge it as such. However, I would have two thoughts on that. One, it would be very difficult to prove it isn't from personal usage. As I said, the average smoker would take 10 trips, so why couldn't the average smoker go over, buy 8,000 cigarettes at once and just go, well, I smoke 20 a day, I smoke every day, that's 7,200 cigarettes, it's for personal use. And I would also wonder what they would do with it, because, as I said, I have a feeling that this is probably legally dubious.
I'm convinced it is. Because, I mean, the observation that I have always felt that made it problematic is, other than the fact that it seems to be clearly against both the spirit and the word of a free movement of goods and services across Europe, it's also an inequitable treatment. I mentioned to you that it seemed to me that, for example, if you're on the continental Europe, if you go from France to Italy or Italy to Austria, or Austria to Germany, or Germany or Austria, Germany to France, or France to Spain, any of these countries, they're all non-Schengen countries. There are no customs checks. So I could have 8,000 fags in France and bring them into Italy, or I could have a lorry full of wine for my own personal use, which I bought in Champagne, and I'm bringing it back into Germany because I have a few weddings in Germany. And nobody's checking. Nobody's controlling what I'm doing. And I think that the very fact of the lack of fairness would actually have to be part of the consideration as well. I'm surprised. Now, it may be the case that somebody actually has taken a case on this already. I don't know.
One thing I was actually quite surprised by is you can go to Bulgaria, buy 8,000 cigarettes, bring them back to Ireland, declare them, pay excise duty on them at the rate that revenue determines per 1,000 cigarettes, and you'll still save about €600.
Well, this is, I mean, one of the things that happens, I'm kind of surprised at that, because one of the things that happens when you start getting all these crazy differentials in tax rates on different products in areas that are otherwise united. Take the example of motor cars. Everybody would imagine that it's cheaper to buy a car in the north of Ireland than in the south of Ireland because of VRT and stat duty and all those other things. But I discovered, now this may have changed, but I know that when I was in college and afterwards, it was very much the practice of guys who were from the north to buy their cars in the south and then re-import them into the north, because since the taxation was so much higher in the South, the cars were sold into by the manufacturers. The price that they charged the retailers in the South was lower than the base price in the North. Since everything else was calculated off the base price, it was actually cheaper for them to buy it in the South and then bring re-import it to the North. So they could leverage, and that's what happens. People, when people are creative, they will leverage these differences. They will find these little tricks and leverage them.
In economics, it's referred to as arbitrage.
Yes.
And what that is the practice, you buy a good in one area, or you take advantage of a price in one area, and then you make a deal in another area. So in this instance, you'd buy cigarettes in Bulgaria, you'd sell them in Ireland. Now, if you pay the excise, you can still do that. If you don't pay the excise, if you bring them in as personal and then you sell them, well, you are in a level of profit which is incredible. I mean, you're talking about a margin that is in the hundreds of percent.
Now, if we imagine for a moment we're talking about, say, Turkey, which is slightly cheaper than Bulgaria again, but whether it's, say we're talking Bulgaria, we're talking Albania, which is also very cheap. Now, they buy their cigarettes from somebody. The people in the shops obviously don't buy, they're buying wholesale. If you get some person who is maybe a little bit unscrupulous, Gary, and there are people out there who, when you go to Bulgaria, you buy a van or an Arctic full of Bulgarian fags, and you bring them across, and you manage to get them into Rosslare, or you get them into Stranraer, and you drive them down. The potential for money making is tremendous.
I saw a study a couple of years ago, and it looked at America, because the different states all charge taxes on cigarettes at a different rate. And the question the study asked was, basically, do you want to make a quick $2 million?
Mm-hmm.
And what it said is, if you buy a truck full of cigarettes in Virginia, and you sell them in New York at the New York price, but of course you're not actually paying that to the government because you bought them in Virginia, you're not paying that to the government of New York, I mean, you will make $2 million. That is the price differential there. Now, it's illegal, but by that study estimated that more than 60% of cigarettes that were sold in New York came from another state because of their cost. And what I wonder about this is a situation in which cigarettes are highly taxed and smuggling becomes rampant is the worst of all worlds.
Yes.
Because the government of Ireland does not get the money from those cigarettes, but we get the health negatives of cigarette usage. Now, a lot of people will say cigarettes should be incredibly expensive because they'll make higher usage of the public healthcare system.
No, but they won't.
There aren't many studies on it, but the studies I've seen actually say the heavy smokers don't make heavy usage of the public healthcare system for the very simple fact that they die younger, and most of the costs that are associated with the public usage of the health system are old people who have chronic conditions, and it goes on for years, and it's a massive amount of money. Smokers tend to die younger, so their costs are lower.
The smoker is the patriot. It's the healthy person that ruins the health system.
Oh, absolutely. In this system, however, if you're looking at this, Michael, and you're a smoker, like I've seen people go to Bulgaria or countries like that, and I know people have just gone up to them and go, will you get me, like, you know,
yes,
200 cigarettes? It's a common thing. But this is now such an extreme difference that I would be concerned the government is actually just causing people to go and realise that they can do this. And actually, you could... That's like in Ireland, we were saying that someone who smokes 3 packs a day would pay 15,000 in tax. If you did this system and you went to Bulgaria 30 times a year,
yeah,
which would be a ridiculous amount, you wouldn't spend 15,000. You'd spend 4,800.
But this is precisely the thing that one of the concerns I adverted to at the beginning of our conversation is, to what extent have they really considered the unintended, shall we say, the unintended consequences? And I know you might say by very definition, unintended consequences are difficult to foresee, but they're not actually. You can work out what could be the consequences. They're not the direct consequences. So I'll give you an example of exactly what you're talking about, because I think people don't take the issue of cigarette smuggling seriously because it's fags. And so actually, what can it be? Sometime in the mid-90s, at the time when the Albanian mafia had pretty well taken over cigarette smuggling into Italy, I was given to understand. And Italy, even though the price of cigarettes is much lower than here, I mean, it's not, it has always was half price or less. Everywhere you go in Italy, you will see, generally speaking, the Moroccan men on the side of the street, and they'll have cigarettes out in front of them, and they will be selling them, and they will be half the price again of what those that are being sold by the state monopoly, because all cigarettes in Italy are ultimately sold by the state monopoly. It was estimated that when the Albanian mafia had actually taken over the cigarette ring, the value of the illicit cigarette market was significantly bigger than the heroin market in Italy. There was much more money selling illegal fags than there was selling heroin. Everybody's terrified of heroin. But what for them, it was a much nicer way of making money because there was, for whatever reasons, there were much lower levels of violence. People took it less seriously. It wasn't, there was no great war on illegal fags in the same way as there was on heroin. There was lots of money. And my ultimate point is, and this I wanted to say earlier, when you buy fags on the black market, you do all the things that you do, that you listed, but also you're putting money into the pockets of some very, very bad people. The probability is that in Ireland, you'll be putting it into the pocket of the last resilient paramilitaries, or shall we say, those people who maybe pretend to be the residue of the paramilitaries, but they're actually just old-fashioned gangsters. You'll be financing them.
I would strongly suspect that at the price differential we're now seeing here, and that kind of difference, that if you were to examine the price we sell tobacco at as a revenue-raising measure, it probably fails, because it's made alternatives so attractive.
Well, I'm
and
certain
if you were to
that.
Consider it as a health measure, in that you want to drive people to stop smoking, if you drive up the rate of smuggling, and therefore you can have someone who is able to drop the price 70%, they may actually increase their rate of smoking because it is now so cheap. So you may actually undermine your own health benefits at the same time, because people ignore what you're selling and go for the cheaper option.
I believe that is exactly what's happening.
And there is the other point. So you have areas where you directly buy cigarettes that have been imported, and you'll have the savings. But I would be very interested to see, are there any shops in the country that actually do this and then sell those as if they were Irish cigarettes, and just make note of the massive price differential? There would be difficulties there, because I assume the packaging is in some case region specific. But I would be interested to see if that's a case, or if this is individual sellers. But as I said, I never looked at the figures, and I kind of assumed some of this was the standard sectoral we're being put upon by the government. But looking at these figures, they definitely have a point.
Yeah, I think that we've, as regards to tax raising issue, while you may apparently be increasing revenue because of the, I think you actually are not. I think you're driving, at this stage, they've driven so many people away that they've lost revenue. They've reached the tipping point as a revenue-raising point. And for the health point, I absolutely agree. I think that probably already a couple of years ago, we've reached the point where we have driven so many people into the illegal tobacco, black market tobacco world, where the prices are so significantly lower, that the actual health benefits, again, have been mitigated. You're going to have some people who will give up, but I think that what's hidden here are the people, not the people who give up, but rather the people who don't give up as a consequence of the fact that they're buying cheaper cigarettes on the black market.
This, to me, combines with what we've been seeing with Simon Harris the last while, where Simon Harris came out and he basically kind of took a shot at people who'd been asking him to meet representatives of the vaping industry.
Yeah.
And he was saying, I'm not going to meet these people. I'll never meet these people. How dare they bring these people in here? But if you are looking at an actual harm reduction level here, we know vaping is substantially safer than smoking. But also, if you want those in the average industrial wage, lower incomes, to have the greatest amount of money that they can have, there is no way vaping is going to cost someone $5,000 a year. So it would seem to be, on one hand, we've gone mad about tobacco, and on the other hand, we've taken something which has been shown to be a safe alternative and a much less expensive alternative, and we're going to just, it looks like they're moving in the direction of putting in of restricting access to it, mostly for preventing under-18s from buying it, which I don't think anyone cares about, but also restrictions on flavours, and it seems to be going in a direction.
But it's all nonsense stuff, but nonsense stuff which will have a negative impact. The first point regarding the tobacco taxation, and regarding the vaping and his refusal to meet his, it should not be an interesting or revolutionary thing to say that the government is dedicated to evidence-based policy making. But it is, for a particular party to be actually doing that, it's kind of revolutionary. Simon Harris has explicitly rejected that. Now, listen, we know, I mean, we're sick and tired of saying it. The studies on vaping up to now have generally indicated one thing. However, they're not longitudinal. We haven't been doing it for very long. We don't really know. But the point is, if you're going to reject them, if you're going to start to reject vaping as an alternative, if you're going to impose punitive regulation upon it, it should be because you have evidence. You should have a scientific, empirical reason so to do. One of the things they did, and Jesus, it's just so fucking stupid. That's the other thing, Gary, that's so tiring. One of the things they did was they said, you can't sell them in 20ml bottles anymore. It has to be 10ml bottles. Well, I actually don't know. But the little bottles, and they weren't very big, but you can't sell them in the big. Now there's a maximum size, which means that rather than having a bottle that'll do you for 2 or 3 weeks, you have to go back every week to the vaping shop to get your new bottle. So that'll discommode you. They're talking about, yes, I did 18s rather than 16s. They're talking about setting up special task forces to ensure that the vaping shops are obeying all these rules. When the rules regarding the sale of alcohol, say, to drunk people seem to be completely ignored. It's just so, oh, well, I don't like the sound of that. Oh, there's something going on there I don't like the look of. There's no evidence base. And Christ almighty, in every area, not just in health, but in everything, surely government, if they're going to have a policy about something, if they're going to try and influence the direction of the people to make them go this way rather than that way, it should be because somebody has a good, solid, empirical reason to believe that X is X and Y is Y and this is good and that is bad. But they don't. Harris has actually explicitly said, no, I'm not interested in listening to them. They may have arguments, they may have facts, they may have studies. I'm not interested. That's bizarre behaviour. That's not the behaviour of an adult man or a member of a government or a senior government minister.
I mean, I've been actually quite impressed with the British response to this, because we're seeing this sort of panic about it in many places, yeah, particularly America. But the British... Like, I saw on TV ASH, which is the action on... it's an anti-smoking lobby. That's what it does. It's an anti-smoking NGO. Doesn't believe smoking. Anyone should smoke. And they came out, and I saw this person on TV giving a very strong defence of vaping. For the very simple reason that they said, people are changing from smoking to vaping. It is a movement in the right direction. It's massively safer. Is it perfect? No. But what we're seeing from the statistics is that young people may try it once, but they're not picking it up in large numbers. Active smokers are, and you're going to see a continuation or an improvement in their overall health, and you're going to see them spending less money, and Britain has decided that is a thing we should support. It seems like Harris has decided that that's not important.
Now, ASH, to me, that was remarkable, because ASH have been implacable enemies of tobacco and all the its pomps and promises.
Years.
For years and years, and absolutely relentless. They do not have any time for the tobacco industry or for the tobacco companies. Now, we know, for example, that tobacco companies are involved in a number of the larger vaping organisations. They have expertise in this area. And it would have been perfectly normal politics for ASH to go, oh, no, the vaping very bad, people making money this way. But they didn't. They said, no, we regard this as a positive. It's a way of getting people out of cigarettes, and cigarettes are very bad. The NHS in England has been remarkably pro. Pro vaping makes it sounds like they're taking a position, sort of deliberate position on vaping, but rather they have been remarkably positive on.
Oh, you also had Public Health England, which is a very serious health protection agency. It's a part of the Department of Health and Social Care in the UK, and it came out and it made the same point. And if you go on the NHS website, you'll see the same point, because the British have accepted that. You know the old saying, the perfect is the enemy of the good?
The good, yes, indeed. There's great truth to that.
Vaping is 95% less harmful,
yes,
than smoking. And England has said, that's fantastic. Lots of the other parts of the world, and it looks like Harris as well, mm-hmm. are moving in a direction of going, ban it.
Ban it, because it's only
95% less harmful. And we need 100%. And if we can't get that, well, we suppose nothing will happen.
And
but we've got really good intentions.
We don't have longitudinal studies. And there are studies which suggest that if we put flavours in with oils, in with water, that we don't know what will happen. But it's all don't know and conjecture. And it's true we don't have longitudinal studies. So let's do them rather than stand. And if you're serious about them, you'd fund them. Set them up and fund them.
We know this from HICWA, which is the Health Information and Quality Authority.
Yeah.
Even they have said people who use e-cigarettes to quit smoking, I think it was twice as likely to be successful in stopping smoking.
Mm-hmm.
But no, I think we've sort of drifted off the major point of tobacco.
Well, it's a connected point.
Yeah,
it's about the fact that governments are behaving in a way without fully considering what the empirical evidence tells us will be the consequence of doing this. They don't care about the actual consequences. What they're doing is they're saying we are showing what kind of people we are. I hate the phrase because it's become such a cliche, but this is ultimately doing politics through virtue signalling.
Yeah, I think at the end of the day, if you want evidence-based policy, if you want a policy that maximises revenue, and if you want a policy that promotes health, we have gone too far. This policy is no longer related to either of those things. And I mean, if it was any other habit, and the government taxed it to a degree where you could fly abroad, take 10 holidays... Put yourself up on Airbnb. Costs £100 a turn, you'll still save a couple of thousand in Bulgaria. I think if it was anything else, people would go, this is a catastrophic failure. But it looks like it doesn't seem like we actually care what the results of these policies are. It's just accepted that the price goes up year on year, and that things like vaping are a bad thing, and you just do them unthinkingly. It doesn't seem they care.
No, that's the impression they give. Anyway,
yeah, I think if we leave it there, and if anything else interesting comes out of the budget, there was some movement on carbon taxes. We might cover that later, but I think we'll end that there at the minute. So I've been Gary Kavanagh,
and I've been Michael Dwyer. Bye bye.
All the best.